Well, welcome to 12-12-12 here, this historic day, only 9 days before the end of the Earth, according to the Mayan calendar. And it's a Juneau afternoon. Let's ignore that Mayan calendar for now and have a good afternoon together on Juneau afternoon. How you doing, everyone? I'm Andy Klein with you. And Jim Clark is also here today. We're going to be talking about the Juneau World Affairs Council's speaker that's happening tonight in the KTO-TV studio, Jack Perkowski. Also going to be talking to the author of a brand new children's book, Tuck Me In, a really wonderful new book available at Hearthside. And there'll be a book signing at Hearthside. And Sarah Asper-Smith, the author of that book, will be with us. It's Wildlife Wednesday, and that's happening tonight at UAS. Photographer Doug Jones is going to be talking about a recent trip to Denali, and then Tina Brown will also be here from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. And we'll get an update on everything happening up at Eagle Crest, which is a lot. There's a lot going on up at Eagle Crest now that there's a little bit of snow on the ground, and we'll be talking to the folks from Eagle Crest about that as well. First, here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Wisconsin county has filed a lawsuit against a federal agency to get information on a possible land deal that would benefit a local tribe. Steve Risom reports.
Sauk County officials accused the U.S. Department of the Interior of withholding access to public records. The county wants to know what the Ho-Chunk is planning to do with 600 acres that the tribe wants to put in a land trust. If the trust status is approved, the Ho-Chunk would not have to pay property taxes on those acres. Right now, Sauk County collects about $700,000 in property taxes from that land every year. Sauk County Board Chair Marty Krieger says Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer hasn't shared a lot of details. He says the documents would help the board to evaluate the tribe's plans.
In order for us to be in favor of something as well as against something, we have to know what's being presented.
The intention, according to Greendeer, is to create jobs. As for specifics, Greendeer says he's keeping them close to his chest for now.
Historically, Sauk County has run opposition to our applications for different reasons. The most recent is, I guess, what is kind of the centerpiece of today is the FOIA request, or the Freedom of Information Act, that the Sauk County Board has sought.
Several attempts to contact the U.S. Department of the Interior for comment were unsuccessful. The Ho-Chunk isn't the only Wisconsin tribe to have run into problems when trying to put land into trust. In the 1980s, the Menominee and Stockbridge tribes wanted to put Shawano County land into a trust. A local township tried to stop the action, but the tribes prevailed. I'm Steve Risom.
The fate of a troubled tribal casino project in Oklahoma remains in limbo. KGOU's Kurt Gwartney reports.
Tribal council members with the Muscogee Creek Nation have voted against taking over a controversial casino near Tulsa, Oklahoma, initially set up by the Kyleegee tribal town. Council members voted 7-2 against the proposal Tuesday night. If the council had approved the plan, officials say the Muscogee Creek Nation would have received 70% of profits from the Red Clay Casino. Work on that project was stopped earlier this year at the casino site after a federal judge ruled the Kyleegee tribal town did not have jurisdiction to build the casino on the land in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Developers had hoped to finish work on the Red Clay and then sell it to the Muscogee Creek Nation. Kyleegee officials have said the casino could bring in $25 million a year. Several city, county, and state officials have objected to the casino's construction. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
The U.S. Department of Education is conducting a study about a college and its work with Native youth. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Red Cloud School is a private Catholic facility on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. The school has a working relationship with the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology in Rapid City, a couple hours away from Pine Ridge. The university has sponsored several summer programs for students at Red Cloud, including classes and camps, and the Department of Education is interested in what they're doing. The DOE is working on a study to determine the impact of those programs. Two officials with the School of Mines are taking part in interviews with the Department of Education at the Red Cloud School. Information from the interviews will end up in the study and also in a lessons learned guide. As part of the day's activities, the university representatives had a chance to talk to students about the School of Mines and Technology. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
During this month in 1854, the Treaty of Medicine Creek was signed, which created three reservations for Northwest tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and we're going to be talking to Jim Clark in just a second as well about the Juneau World Affairs Council talk that's coming up tonight. Going to be having some snow mixed with rain tonight and the rest of today, and a snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches for the rest of the day is in the forecast, with highs around 34 degrees. Snow and rain again tonight. Snow accumulation up to 2 inches tonight. Temperature steady, right around freezing. And for Thursday, snow likely, rain in the morning, and then a chance of snow showers and rain throughout the afternoon, with snow accumulation up to 2 inches for tomorrow as well. Snow's in the forecast, rain and snow kind of hovering around 32 degrees for the extended forecast through till Sunday, when it dips down a little bit more and should be cloudy skies with snow likely, and then it can get a chance of rain. So that's snow and rain happening throughout the next few days here. And we'll be talking to the folks up at Eagle Crest about what that means for the mountain. But right now, Jim Clark is with me. Jim, thanks so much for joining us on a June afternoon.
Well, thanks for having us. Sure. Appreciate it.
You've got a really fascinating speaker. Mr. China is going to be speaking tonight. Is that right?
Jack Perkowski. Yeah. And he's got certainly a very interesting resume. He's written a book called Managing the Dragon, How I'm Building a Billion-Dollar Business in China. And basically, he got a Harvard MBA in 1973, worked on Wall Street for a while, and in 1992 cashed in and moved to China and put together an auto parts industry. Went all over China finding people to manufacture parts for himself.
Fascinating. I mean, he, what I just in the small bio that you showed me read there, that he actually took almost a year to travel around China and figure out what kind of business he wanted to get into.
Exactly. And so he finally settled on auto parts and ended up trying three management structures. First, outside people outside China, then people who he had gotten in the joint ventures he put together as managers, who really weren't trained and sufficiently in managing enterprises, and had some problems with them. So at that point, he brought in a whole bunch of young Chinese, newly educated managers who made his business go.
Kind of the new wave, the new China, the strategy new China ended up being what he went with, and that was where the business really took off.
And the business took off, and he's been writing about it, talking about doing business in China all over the United States, and he's just been in China. He's coming here, having been in China, I think, 10 days ago. So it's going to be a very, very interesting talk he's given tonight. I'd like to remind everybody that unlike our usual Juneau World Affairs Council events, which are at 5 in the evening, this one's going to be at 8 in the evening.
Okay, and that's great to know. Great. Okay.
Yeah, he's making he's coming in from
flying
from
in
speech
as we
Pittsburgh.
Speak. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, well, what's interesting about him as well is that and I mean, this is something that, and we'll talk about, your daughter is actually going to be one of the speakers coming up, and she's someone who lives back and forth in South Korea, but knows Korean. and knows that language, and that's a big part of her travel experience and a big part of her immersion into the culture. He doesn't know Chinese and has never – I mean, I'm sure he knows some rudimentary sayings and things like that, but he sort of talks about how Jack Borkowski talks about how not knowing Chinese, he actually feels like maybe is a strength.
Well, you know, it'd be an interesting discussion to hear between my daughter and him, because she believes you really can't understand a society well until you can speak their language and really hear how the people think in their own language, and it's just very, very important as far as she's concerned to know that. So it may account for – he might have gotten there a little bit faster, I think, if he'd have spoken the language.
I mean, they're after two different things, I think, whereas Jocelyn is someone who wants to become immersed in the culture and is after an artistic kind of outlook. Jack Borkowski is going there with business and business and only business in mind. And what he was saying in that short piece that you gave me on it was he felt like, well, by not knowing the language, he had to learn who he could trust and who to really rely on and who was really giving him the straight story and who wasn't. And that built these very strong relationships that then he has depended on.
Yeah, and to the extent that that's how it works, or a rationalization for not learning the language, who knows?
Yes, right.
You know, if he might have had a better understanding of who to trust if he'd had a little bit better appreciation of the language, the culture, and the way that folks work within their culture. But who knows? I mean, it'll be interesting to hear him speak to that topic tonight.
That's an interesting thing about this speech, whereas often World Affairs Council speakers are journalists or people working in the area who just kind of talk about big issues surrounding a specific area where they have a lot of expertise. This is a person who comes from a very narrow view of what he's trying to accomplish and what he knows about, really. And of course, it's going to touch a lot of things. He's operating a billion-dollar business. It's a massive undertaking and has to get involved in lots of things. But that's an interesting point of view to come from, a strictly business point of view.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that he sold that business, and he sold it to Bain Capital. With all we've heard about Bain Capital, he sold that in 2010 to Bain. So he's no longer the owner of the business, but he's got a real history of doing business in China. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting to hear him speak. Years ago, in my lawyer's life, I represented Alaska Pulp over in Sitka, which worked in not only Japan, but in China and Korea, with various mixed results given the time periods in which they were working there. So it's going to be interesting to see what his experiences have been, and I would really urge people to come, anybody that doing business or would like to do business abroad, probably learn a lot from hearing from him.
Yeah, and that's happening tonight in the KTO TV studios. It's a really great opportunity for us here at K2 as well, for K2 TV to be able to film these speakers, and we actually end up broadcasting a lot of these speeches later in our broadcast schedule on 360 North. So that's a great thing as well. That's happening tonight, 8 o'clock in the TV studios. Give me a little preview of what some of the other speakers coming up. I know we talked already about Jocelyn's coming up.
Well, Jocelyn's coming and probably be speaking sometime the week of the 6th. We haven't fixed the date yet. She gets back from Korea on Monday. As you said, she's a professor at a university in Korea, and she's teaching the Korean Wave, which is a pop culture theme in which that the government's been promoting, the South Korean government's been promoting, and there's a symbiosis, if you will, between the artists who produce that kind of music, the pop music, and the government, which is attempting to promote it throughout the world.
And well, it's so working. I mean, we'll hear a little Gangnam Style here from Psy coming up, and that's K-pop. I mean, Korean pop is this huge thing. It's fascinating to know that that's something that's actually government supported and in some ways government generated.
Amen. And so One of the things, the title of her speech just kind of sounds very professorial, but it's called The Korean Wave, National Branding, Soft Power, and intangible heritage in the age of the market society. Now,
that sounds like a research paper, right?
Exactly. It sounds like a term paper.
Yes.
But I think she's going to give a lot of insight to what this wave means. She's been teaching it. She teaches it in summer school in Seoul and at the university where she is, which is in Daejeon.
Must be very interesting for her because she's someone who's actually a musician but is especially fascinated in the traditional Korean music.
Her end of it is the Korean end, and so she's the traditional Korean
right.
end. She plays in traditional instrument called a kayagum, and is involved with something called pansori singing, which is the traditional Korean, and this is anything but the traditional
That's right.
Korean.
That's right.
And she's just trying to plug it into the heritage and the culture and how it's evolving in Korea. So I think that'll be an interesting talk as well. One other really good speaker who we've not nailed down a date with is Clyde Prestowitz, who is an expert on Japan, has written extensively. He's another Harvard professor with extensive number of books on how business is done in Japan. And, of course, they're coming up with an election in Japan pretty soon. He should speak very interestingly of that. Incidentally, Jocelyn should also have something to say about the election. It's going to take place in South Korea next week.
Hmm.
So I think we've got some really interesting speakers coming up. And, again, JWAC is free. And as you point out, we put it on 360 North for broadcast all over the state. Again, I'd like to express my appreciation to K2 TV for doing that.
Sure, yeah. It's a great, as I said, we feel like it's a great partnership. I know K2 TV does as well. Well, Jim, thanks so much. Jim Clark with Juneau World Affairs Council. And thanks to Juneau World Affairs Council, all you guys do for bringing in these fascinating speakers, educational and fascinating speakers across the globe to our little town here in Juneau, Alaska. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks,
Bye now.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자 그런 반전 있는 여자 너는 선호해 낮에는 너만큼 따사로운 그런 선호해 샷 때리는 선어해 밤이 오면 심장이 터져버리는 선어해 그런 선어해 아름다워 사랑스러워 그래 너 hey. 그래 바로 너 hey. 아름다워 사랑스러워 그래 너 hey. 그래 바로 너 hey. 지금부터 갈 때까지 가볼까 오빤 강남 스타일
Oh, it's hard not to just keep going with that.
Oh, I love it. You know, I just got back from a trip to India and the DJ was singing that.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Sarah Asper-Smith joining me now. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Andy, for having me.
I know you weren't feeling well for the time when we did it before and Aaron came in and filled in. That was for your book signing at Alaska Robotics, but you got another book signing coming up.
I do. On Sunday at Hearthside in the mall from 1 to 3.
Nice. And let's talk about this book.
Okay.
I will tuck you in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I would tuck you in.
I would tuck you
with
in.
With the lovely sea otter mom and
super cute
little baby on the cover. And so let's talk. We talked about this a little bit with Aaron, but it's great to talk to you as the source person who wrote the book. So where did the idea for this book came in? There was a series of postcards that you kind of did that was sort of the beginnings idea of this book?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I had initially imagined these cards as, you know, sort of romantic. Like, if you were an octopus, I would grow 8 arms to hold you. And I proposed...
Right. That's interesting that I hadn't thought about that because I've been looking at this book now for a couple
right.
weeks. But, right, those cards originally were more like sweet between sweethearts.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Hopefully, you know, some all-purpose love, but that's the way I had originally imagined it. And then I proposed it to the publisher that published Have You Ever Seen a Smack of Jellyfish? And they really liked it. But wanted it to be more of a children's book, something that you'd read to your kid before going to bed.
And it is a very maternal, paternal, sweet
yes.
thing of saying, you know, I would, you know, you, no matter what you were and no matter what I was, I would take care of you in these very simple ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's really nice. So can we do a little reading?
Sure.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, should I read the whole thing? I guess I can. Yeah. It's not very long.
It's not very long. I think don't give away the ending, maybe. I love, by the way, I mean, everyone has their favorites. The thing that's fun about this book, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but I just love the octopus. The octopi, I should say.
That was my favorite,
I too. Love that so much. But the other thing that's really fun about this book is it's got a little narrative of, if I were this, I would do this, and you can turn the page. But then underneath each picture, there's also a little fun factoid about the creature that's being talked about.
Yes.
And I love the humpback whale one.
Oh, well,
that's my favorite factoid.
Then let me share that one with you.
Tell about what the humpback whale does.
Okay. It says, if you were a humpback whale, I would sing a song to soothe you. And the little fact is, because humpback whales don't have vocal cords, the songs that they sing come from pressing air through their nasal passage.
Isn't that wild? That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not going like la la la. They're actually going. That's how humpback whales are talking.
Hopefully, these little factoids are fun for the parents who are having to read this book over and over again.
And over again.
And, you know, teach the kids a little something, too.
I can definitely see this becoming a lot of little kids out there's favorite book.
Well, I would love that.
And you got great response on First Friday. It was absolutely, like, crazy time.
Yeah, we had a line almost out the door. It was great.
And just signing books the whole night.
Yes. Yeah.
It was really cool. Do you know, is the book being released, kind of, is there a distribution strategy? How does that all work?
Well, so Aaron and the Alaska Robotics Gallery were able to release it early. They got like a special dispensation.
Right. the blessing.
but the official release date was actually the 11th, which it was yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And so that's when everybody else will be releasing it. And it's
on Amazon and places like that?
Exactly, yeah. Right. Although I think on Amazon it's sold out of all the ones they have already because there's a 3-week wait for those books.
What is going on?
I know. It's awesome.
You're like going to become best-selling children's authors.
Well, who knows how many they had to begin with.
Well,
but sure.
Hey.
But we did sell out at Alaska Robotics. We don't have any more books. But luckily, Aaron has ordered some more, so we'll get those in soon. And Hearthside should get theirs for this weekend. And I think Rainy Day Books is going to have me sign some maybe a weekend or two from now.
This is such a great problem to have.
It
you
is.
Know, you're
it is.
Selling out of books too quickly.
Right. Yeah.
That
yeah,
is
it's
awesome.
Great. It's
so
pretty awesome.
Amazon has sold out of your book. I mean, you can get more, but
yeah,
that is so awesome.
It is. They actually picked it. That it was an editor's pick of the month for December. So I think they must have sold a lot for that reason.
There you go. Now, now, what's the tell me about the deal behind the scenes. If there's more books sold, do you guys get more money?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that how it works?
Absolutely.
Is it just a straight thing where you get like 3 cents a book or
something like that?
You know what I mean? That's what happens like in records, right?
Yeah, Well, I think it's probably a similar system. You get an advance, and then if we end up selling tons and tons of books, then they start sending royalty checks.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So
So good.
So that would be great.
Yeah, like I've heard before authors saying, oh, well, like the first pressing is like it covers the advance or something. Mm-hmm. And then if there's a second, after that, that's when you can start actually making a living out of being an author. Right.
Right. Yeah. At this point.
It's volunteer work.
We cannot quit our day jobs, but it's
exciting.
It is.
Tell me about your husband, Mitch Whatley.
Mitch Whatley, did the illustrations for the book, and he did a beautiful job.
What medium did he work in to begin with, and how big are those, or how does that work? Is it computer, or is it?
It is. It's a combination of by hand and by computer. And actually, if you go down to the Alaska Robotics Gallery, you can kind of see his process, because he did the sketches by pencil, and he went through several iterations, and then he would take them into the computer and do the digital coloring, and to give it sort of almost a watercolor type feel.
It looks watercolor or oil based or something to me. I mean, really, they to me look like they're prints of actual paintings,
right.
You know, that he made. So, and he kind of used as inspiration some of the first drawings that you did. So
yes.
This is really an intertwined process, isn't it?
I mean, absolutely.
You had these drawings. He made more drawings. And then how did the writing of it go? Was that all already kind of there from the...
It was, I took most of the writing from the cards that I had already and got rid of a couple that were maybe a little too adult for a kid's book, and added a couple more.
Those jellyfish.
Well, like,
what they do is disgusting.
I love the marmot, but the marmot one was I would whistle as you walk by, and I'm not sure how I'm going to make that work for a kid's book.
You can't do that.
So we added a couple, like the muskox and the hummingbird.
Mom's whistling again. What are you doing?
So weird.
Yeah, the hummingbird. That's a nice one.
Yeah, the hummingbird is... let me find this one. If you were a hummingbird, if you were a Rufus hummingbird, my heart would beat 1,000 times per minute for you.
Oh, that's nice.
I know, so cute.
That's nice. And all these are animals that can be, of course, found in Southeast Alaska?
Yes, yeah. They're all northern animals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have... So this already is a... massive success. I'm just going
to
say it.
That's awesome of you to
say. It's a huge success. It's beautifully done. Having now my child is 20 years old now, but having, you know, gone through that whole period where you have to look for books, this is one that I would want to read every night. And so it's wonderful. Now, are you guys already thinking about another one? Do you want to stay with children's books? Are you thinking about other? What's happening with that process, or is it just too early?
Well, I think Mitch needs a little break from the process. But I have
not handling fame well. Is that what's going on?
It's just all too much.
It's too much.
it ended up working out really well. But drawing, being an artist for a publisher is a lot different than being an artist for yourself. And
right. So he had to work with editors kind of, right?
Exactly.
Like people saying, oh, move the paw over here or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
So that stuff, that is really tough for an artist to have to deal with that.
Yeah, I'm more used to that because I'm a designer in my life. So that's what I do. So that was tough. I think it ended up working out just great. But.
That is an interesting thing when you're a visual artist. It's much, you know, if you're a writer, you expect to be edited.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you're a visual artist, it's like, wait a minute, I made those choices for all kinds of reasons I can't even explain.
Right.
And that's why I did that. And for someone to come in and say, no, you know, make it bluer or make it this or that. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I can imagine that being, you know, an adjustment anyway.
Yeah.
At any rate, yeah.
We shall see. I do have a script that I'm working on for a next book that's about a little girl who hates the rain and she lives in a rainforest.
Okay. So, is this a little autobiographical?
I don't know if you remember our summer, Andy, but I spent some time looking out the window.
Yes. Yeah, it was a rough summer. And it's not, a little real rain snain out there happening right now as well.
Yeah.
Well, beautiful book. I Would Tuck You In is the name of it. It's brand new, just released worldwide yesterday. And a book signing happening at Hearthside Books downtown or in the mall?
In the mall.
In the mall. The Hearthside Books in the Valley, in the mall, in the Nugget Mall, which is a really nice bookstore out there. And Sarah Asper-Smith will be there. Will Mitch be there, too, signing books?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You get signatures from both maybe holiday greetings, things
absolutely.
Like that in there from the authors of the book.
Very good
and,
Christmas presents.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like Hearthside's the one place you can get this book.
Yeah.
This is it. You can't get on my Amazon right now. It's already
That's
sold
right.
out.
Yeah.
Are there other nationwide places people can check? Barnes &
Noble? Barnes & Noble
online,
should have them.
Stuff
it,
like
should,
that?
It should be. It's distributed by Random House, so it should be. wherever fine books are sold.
Yes, wherever your finest books are sold. Sarah Asperthith, thanks so much. Beautiful work. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Andy.
It's
and
exciting.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. I Would Tuck You In, and that's by Sarah Asperthith and Mitch Watley. And go to the book signings happening Sunday.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of Patrick O'Brien, born Richard Patrick Russ in Buckinghamshire, England, 1914. Best known for his 20 novels, historical fiction set in the British Royal Navy, the early 19th century, starring the naval captain Jack Aubrey. The first book, Master and Commander, published in 1969. Patrick O'Brien, a private, methodical man living in a secluded French village, wrote 1,000 words a day and avoided personal interviews. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Language is like a cracked kettle on which we beat out tunes for bears to dance to, while all the time we long to move the stars to pity." Gustave Flaubert, born in Rouen, France, 1821, a perfectionist, he said, "I spent the morning putting in a comma and the afternoon removing it." His masterpiece, Madame Bovary, appeared first in serial form in magazines, the story of Emma Bovary, a doctor's wife, who longs to experience the passion and excitement she has only read about in novels. It's the birthday of the painter Edvard Munch, born in Luton, Norway, 1863. Lost both parents, two of his siblings, to tuberculosis. Another sister went mad. Munch said, "I inherited two of mankind's most frightful enemies, the heritage of consumption and insanity. Illness and madness and death were the black angels that stood at my cradle." And from that he gave us his famous painting, The Scream, in 1893. Had a nervous breakdown in 1908, ended up in a sanitarium, gave up drinking, managed to get some tranquility in the second half of his life. But, Munch said, "Without anxiety and illness, I am a ship without a rudder. My sufferings are part of myself and my art. They are indistinguishable from me, and eliminating them would destroy my art." And it's the anniversary of the opening of the world's first motel. It was called the Milestone Motel, later the Motel Inn. It was in San Luis Obispo, about halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco, a string of bungalows where you could park, created by a developer named Arthur Heinemann. Here's a poem for today by John Daniel, "After the Wedding," for Marilyn. After the white balloons were swept away on the wind that had swallowed most of our vows, after the embraces and tears, the flung rose petals, after new friends and old friends and aunts from all over, after you tossed the bouquet and the cries of the children raised coyote cries on the rim, after chicken grilled on juniper coals, cold beer from the cattle trough, and hours of hot dancing to Beatles and Stones, the last of us swaying arms on shoulders, singing ourselves hoarse. How good it is to find you now beyond all the loud joy, driving north in rain, and the lovely ease of our silence. After the Wedding by John Daniel, from his collection Of Earth, published by Lost Horse Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture, you can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement, available at various locations in Southeast.
All right. Jerry Lee Lewis, Wild One. It's Wild Wednesdays. 12-12-12. It's a wild day. Tina Brown from the Wildlife Alliance is with us. Tina, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, okay. Doug Jones is with us as well. And Doug, you'll be speaking tonight at Wildlife Wednesdays out at the UAS Glacier View Room there. That's Eagan 221. Thanks for coming in. You've taken a trip in September up to Denali. Is that the focus
Denali
of
Denali every fall after the season has a 4-day period. It's a second Friday through Monday after Labor Day where they allow 400 vehicles a day into Denali National Park, and you can drive as far as conditions allow. And I've always wanted to do that. So this year I got lucky, was able to be successful in the lottery. There's less than 20% chance of being successful. This year I was, and so I loaded my car with my camera gear, and away I went.
Now, I've got a little confession to make here, which is that I used to work for Fish and Game as their public information officer, and I got to go do this exact thing up there, but I had a little special license, so we got to drive all over the place on that first couple weeks of September, trip of a lifetime. Right,
amazing.
I mean, it's so incredible. And how was the weather when you were there? Did it cooperate?
This was a dream trip. It rained until even in the morning before I got into the car to go into the park. It was raining. And then as I got into about Savage River, it started to clear. By Teklanika, the skies were crystal blue and clear, and it was drop-dead gorgeous
and
all
Denali
the way into
came
the park.
Out and wasn't shrouded by clouds?
Denali
and
was shrouded. Okay. That was the one downside. But there was tons of animals. It was just an amazing trip for seeing bears and moose and caribou.
So there is this caribou crossing that happens at that time of year. Did you catch that?
I did not catch that. I saw individual animals, but I didn't get that.
That was my experience, too. When we were there, we were looking for this thing where we're going to see, you know, hundreds and hundreds of animals in front of us, and we only just saw a few individuals here and there. But lots of moose that time of year. We happened to see lots of moose, which is spectacular to see these moose in Denali. So gorgeous.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. And with all the camera gear, and by myself, so I had all the time in the world to stop and take pictures. It was a dream trip, really was.
Tell me about some of the things that you maybe surprised you about what happened there while you were in Denali.
Well, one of the things I was hoping for was a bull moose. I got no bull moose. I got lots of cows with calves, but I didn't see a single bull moose. The weather the day before, they were only able to get into about the East Fork or the Toklat River, less than halfway. The day I was there, we were held for a couple hours in the morning, and they opened up the roads, and the whole park was open and available to us. And I was really kind of surprised. I expected that we wouldn't have access to the whole park, but we did.
Tina, how'd you hear about Doug and his photography, and how did that happen?
Well, I follow Doug's photography, and anytime he gives a talk around town, I try to attend because he's such a good photographer and such a good speaker. And I guess somehow I heard him mention that he was going to Denali and jumped right on it. That, as you've pointed out, that time of year in Denali, oh my gosh, it's just spectacular. And knowing Doug's skills and what a wonderful speaker he is, there just couldn't be a better combination.
You've got these beautiful colors on the ground with the bushes and all that stuff, all the reds and oranges and all that, and then to capture these beautiful animals in that with that background is pretty spectacular, obviously,
Incredible, yes.
So what is the thing that you feel like is your strength as a photographer? Do you like doing the landscape, panorama kind of stuff? Do you like focusing on individual animals? Is there something that really is the thing that you're most happy doing when you're photographing, being out there doing photographs?
Animals and birds. I love photographing birds. They're extremely challenging because they move constantly. So bird photography is one of my my special places. But I love taking pictures of the animals as well. The bears were perfect this time of year. In September, they're getting ready to go in the den.
So they're nice and fluffy and big.
They're nice and fluffy, and they're looking at food, and they're not concerned about anything else. So they ignored me for the most part, and I saw 15 or 16 different bears on the trip. So it was just an amazing opportunity to be able to photograph bears.
Is there bird life there that you were able to capture as well?
The part of the trip, since I took the car from here, got on the ferry, went to Haines, and from Haines Junction to Tok, you're driving through what's known as the Shacwack Trench. And it is a major flyway and corridor for birds going north into the Yukon and Alaska in the spring and then coming back south in the fall.
Right, so that time of year, yeah.
That time of year, exactly. So it was a good opportunity for watching and looking at birds.
What'd you see?
A variety of birds, big variety. But a lot of the swans are coming back then.
Okay.
Lots and lots of waterfowl are coming back down that Shacwack Trench. And I got on a webpage, I don't remember how, but they put geotags on short-eared owls so they could track them. And they've got a webpage you can hit and look at where these short-eared owls that were tagged in Nome are going. They go clear all the way down to Mexico, but vast majority of them are
going to. I see another Wildlife Wednesday coming up on that. You've got to find out who does that. That's amazing sounding.
You know, Doug is retired from Fish and Game, and he's also a naturalist. And you combine that with his photography skills, and he's an Audubonner, so he's a birder. You've really got a great combination.
When you talk to crowds about this stuff, what sort of things do you try to focus on, or what do you think, what is it that people are most interested in hearing about?
You know, it was interesting. Do you know who Flip Nicklin is? He's a world-class National Geographic photographer. Mm-hmm. And Flip Nicklin did a program in about September or early October on doing this kind of a program. And he said, and I wish I'd seen his program before I did this, you know, because I would have taken different kinds of pictures, I think, than I did. But he said, make sure you give him a sense of place. Where'd you stay? Where'd you eat? What was it like? You know, what was the weather like? And who, why, what, when, where, why now kind of a thing.
Tell the story.
Tell a story. Yeah, and so that's what this is about, is trying to tell the story of this trip. And I wish I'd, like say, had Flip Nicklin's experience or that presentation prior to this trip. But still, that's what I'm trying to roll into this, is to give him money.
But, you know, anyone who has been to Denali at that time of year, and I have, knows how spectacular it is. Those pictures, the photographs will tell a story all their own, and with Doug's narration, it'll be tremendous. If you haven't been to Denali at that time of year, you're in for a treat as well, just to see what it looks like from Doug's perspective.
It is. It's spectacular. I mean, it's kind of like that whole picture maybe we all have in our minds about what Alaska is and what Alaska should look like and does look like. It's it's fall, Denali, bears, moose, caribou. I mean, those are the things. They're so iconic. It's such an iconic
image. You're exactly right. And as you pointed out before, the wildlife is in prime condition at that time of year, so great for the photographs.
Were you able to see any wolves?
Did not see wolves.
Uh-huh.
And that's one animal I heard a lot about as we went into the park and back out of the park, because we got stopped at Teklinika for about 2.5 hours. And so I spent 2.5 hours talking to all the other people that were in there for that day. And then every stop along the way, I would talk to people. And wolves were one of the animals that came up again and again and again. And I know Wildlife Alliance has been working on proposals for wolves.
For reestablishing the Denali buffer zone, the wolf population is at a tremendous low right now. I think a 25-year low, if I'm not mistaken. And we'll be mentioning that tonight, too.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. And obviously, it's a natural conversation to have going from, oh, these are beautiful photographs of a beautiful natural resource that we are the stewards of here in Juneau, in Alaska and in America. And what steps are we taking to protect that natural resource?
Right.
And I mean, I think that ties in so well with these discussions that it's incumbent upon all of us as Americans and as Alaskans to know what's happening with the management of these resources and if we agree with that.
You're exactly right. And you're right for pointing out it's an Alaskan resource and it's also a national resource. These are wolves that are in a national park and preserve.
We feel like we have ownership over that, though. Don't we? I mean, we're Alaskans, right? I mean, Denali is so much a part
of
the identity of the state.
It is a part. Yeah. It's one of the crown jewels of our state and, in fact, of the country and the world. Anyone who has been there knows that.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about Doug's here. Thank you, Doug, so much for telling us all about what you're talking about. Just give us a little preview of some of the other things coming up on Wildlife Wednesdays here as we head into the new year. If we make it past the 21st, that is.
Well, yeah,
the Mayans might get in the way here, but
they
assuming
could get
we're
in
all
the way.
Here in
That's
January.
Why we're going to have such a good time tonight.
That's
we're
right.
celebrating just in case.
That's right.
But coming up in January, we're going to hear from Wayne Reglin. He'll be talking about his book on wildlife management. Carrie Howard in February will be sharing her photography with us. Those of you who enjoy wild shots in the outdoor section of the Empire that Abby Lowell does such a great job with have enjoyed Carrie Howard's pictures, whether you realize it or not. And then coming up in March, Ryan Scott, our area biologist, and Tenny Benz from Fish and Game will be talking to us about that timely topic, bear awareness and bear safety, very important issues. And we'll be giving you more details about those talks soon. But there's a special event coming up on February 21st. We're very excited about. It's a scientific sea otter symposium. It's going to be in the UAS library, and we are featuring some of the top sea otter scientists in the world on Southeast Alaska's sea otters in the world. One of them has done seminal work on sea otters. So you will not find a group of specialists like this anywhere else, probably all together.
All right.
And look forward to details on that.
Cool. Very exciting. Okay. And Wildlife Wednesday, once again, tonight, it's at 7 o'clock. It goes to about 8 o'clock, maybe a little later sometimes. The discussion goes on. But it's at the UAS Glacier View Room, which is in the Egan Library Building. Doug Jones, naturalist and retired fish and game fisheries biologist. Thanks so much. And
thank you.
Good luck tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun and be fascinating to see all these great photographs you took on this very cool trip up to Denali.
And we want to give a shout out to Brownie Troop number 4027. They're coming tonight and we are looking forward to seeing you. Thank you.
You got brownies coming.
Brownies.
All right. You know it's going to be a good
time. And sweet treats that you can eat as well.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank
Have
you.
A good discussion tonight.
Everything to you. You say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Maybe I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there. smile. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. I'll always remember you like a child, girl. You know I've seen a lot of what the world can do, and it's breaking my heart in two, because I never want to see you sad, girl. Don't be a bad girl.
Well, wild world there. It's been wild up on the hill on Eagle Crest. We got Jeff and Jake with us from Eagle Crest. How you guys doing?
Hey, good. Thanks for having us, Andy.
Sure. You guys, let's talk about it. Everyone's talking about it. It's been snowing. Now, it's been raining down here. It's sea level, and it seemed like that snow level was creeping up. But you're saying that actually that was pretty much all snow up at the base there, huh?
Yeah, pretty much all snow. The deluge got about 4.3 inches of new snow Monday night through into Tuesday morning, probably a little more up on the upper mountain. Last night didn't get any new snow, but it has been snowing lightly all day long up there. Temperatures.
Cold last night, though. Got good and probably. But this is kind of the stuff that was needed up there, right? With some wetter snow, pack that really light stuff down a little bit.
Exactly, Andy. We warmed up. You know, temperature at the base is around 28, 29 degrees. Up top, 25 degrees. So that's good news for us because that's going to give us a little wetter, heavy, dense snow. It's wild up there as well. Pretty gusty winds up top. So hard telling what it's going to do, but I have a suspicion the mountain is going to be winter-like.
Okay, all right. So you guys were able to open Hooter Sunday, right, for the day on Sunday. Is Hooter going to remain open as well for this weekend, do you guys think?
Yep. Their plan for this weekend is we'll have Porcupine, Hooter, and Black Bear open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, of course, we'll be evaluating the conditions to see what happens with ptarmigan. That's, of course, everybody's question that they're going. So it just depends upon what Mother Nature does. The forecast for the forecast period looks great. Snow and for the entire week, so we're keeping our fingers crossed.
And that was part of the strategy of having that Black Bear lift, right, was to expand in these kind of marginal conditions to be able to expand the mountain out and get people out skiing in different areas.
Yep, that is correct. And there's some awesome terrain off that Black Bear chairlift, the East Bowl chutes, more intermediate terrain. It's still not going to be for beginners, though. And we found that with Hooter this last weekend, that there are some challenging snow conditions. There won't be very minimal grooming this weekend just because we just don't have a lot of snow cover yet. At least we're smiling because we've got snow.
Right. Now, so what's it looking like the condition might be? There's going to be a hard crust and some more snow on top of that hard crust, right, from that... is that the idea?
Well, I don't know if I'd exactly call it a hard crust. The good news is we did get, with Hooter being open, we got a lot of terrain that was skied and snowboarded on Sunday. So that gets it packed down a little bit. The groomers are going to get out tomorrow. I think we'll have a better idea of exactly what we've got going on. Of course, it's been our Saturday and Sunday the last couple of days, so we haven't been up on the mountain.
We'll see
what's going on first thing tomorrow morning and tell. But I think I wouldn't say a hard crust. I think that we're getting some of the areas that we need to filled in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Well, weekend activities, stuff going on this weekend?
We have the snow bus kicking off on Saturday, Sunday, so folks can get up there by bus, no matter the conditions outside. Don't have to worry about digging your car out.
For people who don't know, how do you meet the bus? Do you have to pay extra, all that stuff? What happens with the bus?
Well, you can find the bus schedule at skijuno.com, and it picks up a variety of places all around town, Andy. We have two different bus routes that we do. We have what we call our valley route, which predominantly focuses on valley locations, and then our Lemon Creek downtown route, which focuses on Lemon Creek downtown and Douglas. It's $6 one way, $10 round trip. And we work with a partnership with First Student. So I always tell people to look for the yellow buses because First Student is the buses that bring you up to the mountain.
It's a school bus.
It's a school
bus. It's a school bus.
Well, that's a school bus
new,
turned
right?
snow bus
they're
on
these
the
nice
weekend.
New school buses that they have now. Right? They're kind of those funky, cool-looking like windows that look just like futuristic or something.
I'm not sure that the futuristic, funky, cool-looking buses will be the ones going up to the mountain.
I see. Say no more.
We need rugged buses.
Yeah,
rugged. We want the rugged bus that will go up the Eagle Crest Road. The Eagle Crest is in great shape, but we just want those rugged ones.
You don't take your Mercedes up the road.
you can.
You take the Jeep.
Yeah, you take the Jeep.
That's right. Take the dog car.
There you go.
That's right. Okay. So that's cool. Those are starting to run, and that's obviously as the season starts cranking up here, you get into that regular schedule of the bus runs, the chairlifts being open, and all that. Anything else going on this weekend?
We have a few things going on. So we have a whiteout sale going on right now. So if folks haven't purchased their season pass already, they can do so. Save $200. Around that range, depending on your age. So check out the whiteout sale online.
Wow, so like
just
a regular adult pass is going for $5.99?
$4.99.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, we're celebrating all this snow, Andy, so we decided to put it on sale for a short period of time.
That's a great deal. I mean, I've talked to folks who, you know, if you're just out of town a little bit earlier in the year and you miss that early season, people are kicking themselves. So this is a great opportunity for people to get that season pass. All right.
It is, and that goes away on Sunday. So make sure you get out, get after it.
Eagle Crest is still like the best deal around, isn't it? $4.99 for a season pass to a world-class ski area? Are you kidding me?
We have a better deal for fifth graders, too.
Oh, you're a fifth grader, you can get a better deal. Okay.
We have the fifth grade passport going on again this year. So if you are a fifth grader or know a fifth grader, they can connect with us, get their passport. They get free lift tickets all year long, get a free rental, and a free lesson at Eagle Crest.
Just because you're a fifth grader?
Just because you're a fifth grader.
The fourth graders and sixth graders are like, what's going on here?
Yeah. This is a program that happens at a variety of different ski areas throughout the industry. And we picked it up and started doing it about 4 or 5 years ago. And it is an amazing success. And we just always want to make sure that the fifth graders in Juneau know that they can come up and go skiing for free. And they get that free lift ticket and that free rental. So there's no reason why every fifth grader in Juneau shouldn't come up at least once or twice.
This is the bonus for being the oldest kids in the elementary school, right? You're fifth graders now. You get to ski for free the whole year.
Yeah. That's
great deal.
That's exactly a good way to put it, Andy.
Yeah. And because next year you're going to middle school and you're not going to like it. I'll tell you right now. You're a low man on the totem pole again. So have a good time this year because next year it's going to be rough. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, another great program that we have, Andy, that I always like to mention is we work pretty closely with the Big Brothers, Big Sisters organization. And so if a big has a season pass, a multi-visit card, or just comes up and buys a lift ticket, their little gets to ski for free. That's a great program. They you have to bring the big and little come together. They get their ID together, and then every time that the big comes up, the little can come along for free. So that's a great program. Littles can take lessons for $15 and have rentals for $10. And again, as long as their big comes up to the mountain with them. And as part of our Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month in January, littles, as long as they come with the bigs, get a free lesson. So this is a great program through Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You can find out more information on that at skijuneau.com. And we're going to have a great Big Brothers, Big Sisters Day in February, and we'll talk way more about that as it gets closer.
That's really cool. I mean, that's such a cool thing. I mean, I'm thinking of four different friends I know right now that I want to make sure know about this program because that's such a cool thing to think about. Just go up and for just, $15, you can get a lesson, you can get the rental, you can do the whole thing, and that's it for the littles. That's great. It's great to hear that program's happening.
Yeah, we just look at Eagle Crest. It's such an amazing community asset, and it's always been my goal to get as many people up on the mountain as we can, and we don't want to make any kind of cut down all the barriers that we can.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else? We've got about a minute here. One more thing to mention?
If we're talking about some of those programs, actually, we've seen some cool kids up on the mountain recently getting fitted for their gear through our Books to Boards program. So another program working with students in the community to get them up on the mountain, learning to ski, board, getting free passes as well. for the season.
Yeah, it's so cool. I just think that it's so great how Eagle Crest is always trying to think of these new ideas to reach out to community members to make sure that everyone has access to the mountain, everyone has access to this great lifelong sport of skiing and snowboarding, right? I mean, it's such a cool thing. It's a great part of being someone who lives in Juneau.
That's exactly it. And so we're always thinking of more programs. If anyone has any ideas, they can certainly contact us up on the mountain. And we're willing to work with any organization in town. Again, we don't want there to be any barriers, especially for the youth of Juneau, to get up and ski and snowboard on the mountain.
And any question, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, when it's raining down here and you're feeling a little down, it's probably snowing up there.
It's beautiful up. It's always beautiful up on Eagle Crest. And you can check out current conditions, what lifts are open, and all the schedules and all the different programs on skijuneau.com. It's a great resource. That website's looking great. Super usable, really fun to use. Check out the webcams and the whole thing up there. Jeff and Jake, thanks so much for coming in, you guys.
Thanks for having us again, Andy.
That's the Eagle Crest Ski Report for today.
Orca colored mountains, zebra colored mountains, panda mountains, yeah, serious mountains, sit seriously. Decided on a different tree, though they newly knit that nest. When they go, they can't carry geodes for lies and tone your bold song.
That's it for a Juneau afternoon today on 12-12-12. Have a good day, everyone. Going to get to NPR News headlines next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.